go ahead and go back to the regular schedule. Regent Henson's not here. Hope that she'll get back in time. So, Dr. Bell, I'll turn it over to you, sir.
Okay. The Academic Affairs Committee does not have a long agenda today. We only have one action item to consider, and there's a couple of other items we'll talk about. The action item concerns approval of some Faculty Emeritus appointments, and Provost Stevens, do you wish to say anything about any of these today or save those for the meeting? Do we have any of them here today?
They're not here.
Yeah.
But I do have some descriptions for each of them. Would you like to hear those?
I would.
Okay.
We would.
There are four. And the first, in no particular order it looks like, are Dr. John Lang Wong, Professor, Education Administration, Leadership, and Research. Dr. Wong's contributions to the university community are deserving of recognition, as is his potential for ongoing contributions to the intellectual and cultural life of the university. He was appointed as a member of the faculty in the Department of Educational Administration, Leadership, and Research in 1987. Dr. Wong is a pioneer in the field of educational administration, serving on the International Council of Professors of Educational Administration and founding their special interest group, Educators Without Borders. Dr. Wong continues to work with the university to enhance inclusivity and diversity through the development of international partnerships and academic programs. His commitment to the profession extends beyond his work at WKU, and his contributions impact the lives of numerous individuals. Dr. Randy Deer was a professor, kinesiology, recreation, and sport. Dr. Deer served as a full-time faculty member at WKU from 1983 to 2014, when he entered transitional retirement. He began as an instructor in the former Department of Physical Education and Recreation and transitioned to an assistant professor in 1992 and more recently to a full professor in 2001. He also served as an assistant dean in College of Health and Human Services from 2005 to 2011. During his career, he left an indelible mark on this institution as an administrator, teacher, and athletic trainer. He was well-respected not only at WKU, but throughout Kentucky through his service to the Kentucky Association of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. He had a successful 30-year career at WKU. Mr. Neil Downing, Professor, Engineering and Applied Sciences. Mr. Neil Downing dutifully served the university for over 18 years and led the transformation of the Architectural Sciences program to become fully accredited through the Association of Technology Management and Applied Engineering. During his academic career, Mr. Downing routinely engaged students in learning through architectural projects. This was a way for students to get real-world experiences through projects that Mr. Downing led. Dr. Lisa Dill, Associate Professor in English. Dr. Dill served as a full-time faculty member at WKU from 1987 to 2014 when she entered transitional retirement. She began as an assistant professor in the English department in 1987 and earned tenure and promotion to associate professor in 1994. Her primary contribution to the department was teaching linguistics courses to English majors, future secondary English teachers, and elementary and middle grades majors. And that's the four.
Any comments or questions? Not, I'll entertain a motion to approve these.
So moved.
And a second.
Second.
Have a motion and a second to approve these emeriti positions and individuals as the provost has described. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. I would ask that if any of those individuals can be present at our meeting and be recognized and take a moment to make a comment if they'd like. I think since academics is at the heart of what we do, it's always nice if we can put eyes on these people that have distinguished themselves. That is our only action item. Provost Stevens and I had a recent discussion, and she has been bi-monthly putting out some information that hopefully all of us are now getting regularly, and I asked her to take a few moments and describe what she's doing and what's going on academically.
Last summer, President Caboni asked each of his cabinet members to share their goals for this academic year. And as the new provost and vice president for academic affairs, I worked with deans and what I call my E-team, executive team. This is associate vice presidents, registrar, associate provosts, the registrar, and other people who report directly to me. And we developed some broadly impactful goals that direct the current work that we do in the division, but also will extend beyond this academic year. So what I passed around was a list of those goals. Not surprisingly, the overarching goal for the Division of Academic Affairs is student success. Nearly everything we do is tied to student success, either directly or indirectly. In addition, all of these goals are consistent with the WKU strategic plan. So the first goal, post-CAPE, to launch new and improved innovative and market-driven academic programs that will attract a diverse body of undergraduate, graduate, and non-traditional students. So to this end, we've shared a process and timeline for the programs identified for transformation last year through CAPE. There were 57 programs. With an eye toward developing programs that will prepare students for success 10 years from now, we've asked our faculty to engage with experts in the disciplines as well as consider market trends for employment and future study. A preliminary plan for each program's transformation is due to the Office of the Provost by the end of next month. If this work is done well, this should take a good part of this academic year. Our developing programs will prepare students for 10 years from now with the expectation that these transformed programs will attract a diverse body of undergraduate, graduate, and non-traditional students. That work is just beginning. Some programs began that work last spring on their own. Some waited for some direction. So the advantage of that is they're kind of staggered in the timeline, which is good, because we don't want them all running through the curriculum process at exactly the same time. The second goal was to implement efficient electronic curriculum personnel and workload processes. Susan spoke about the Eleusian project. This is particularly important for us in academic affairs to function more professionally and efficiently through the use of technology. Our student personnel and financial information system, Banner, has the capability to help us complete essential tasks more efficiently. New modules that streamline workflow processes, faculty load and compensation, and student progression toward degrees are the modules that are essentially most important for us. And they're going to allow employees some flexibility to be more innovative than we have previously had the opportunity to be on this campus. What we really want to do is eliminate some paper processes too. So I'm so happy that you guys are interested or willing to look at some of these reports electronically. Third is to ensure a positive SAC-COC outcome. The importance of this goal cannot be overstated. We cannot function as a university without our regional accreditation. In 2021 is WKU's fifth year after the SACS review, so we get a midterm review. And because of the changes in personnel after the last couple of years, we found that the historical knowledge about the SACS review is slim. What we learned 5 years ago, we don't have that historical knowledge now. Nobody who was here then is currently working in academics. So we worked hard, worked with SACS, and are gaining a thorough understanding of the review process and understand the work that needs to be done. There's a conference in December that several of us are going to go to make sure that we have our abilities and ducks in a row. The most important and impactful work that we have is associated with developing a campus culture of continuous evaluation and improvement. Many universities do this. We have to continually look at ourselves, ask ourselves how we're doing, and be willing to and able to change things so that we continually have a progression toward better processes and better outcomes. And ultimately, this is really about student success. And then finally, foster mutually supportive and productive partnerships between the Division of Academic Affairs and the Division of Enrollment and Student Experience with the ultimate goal of increasing enrollment, persistence, and graduation rates. When I wrote that goal, when we wrote that goal, I had no idea that not only would I be working this closely with not student affairs anymore, it's enrollment and student experience, but also with finance and administration. I spend at least as much time, we in my office spend at least as much time working with Susan and her group as we do with Brian and his. Brian and I, and Susan and I, meet very regularly and work on our joint endeavors. Together, our collaborative work with Ruffalo Noel Levitz and enrollment and student experience, that does not roll off my tongue, has allowed us to bring together faculty and staff from both divisions to develop forward-looking strategic enrollment plans. In addition, retention initiatives, including living learning communities, cohort learning communities, central and mentor advising, first-year experience, and the Summer Scholars Program places both divisions at the center of WKU's efforts at increasing student success. While not an articulated goal, communicating with campus is a high priority. Every other Monday, updates from the provost are emailed to the entire campus community. I write these messages to be informative and to share the progress surrounding specific initiatives while tying them to the bigger picture associated with our work. Each message has a thread associated with student success and opportunity. There's several months to go this year. Do you have any ideas, thoughts, wishes, or things that I can write about? Well, there's a lot of Mondays left. I appreciate some input or suggestions. That's my report.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Again, I think that helps give everyone, again, the broader view of things as this whole meeting has with Grant and CAPE and all the other things that have been part of the strategic planning process that are coming to life and start to bear some fruit. It's an exciting thing to watch.
If I may read it back, one of the things that I want to add to Provost Scher, and I apologize, not here briefly, is that what she's describing and that's crucial to our success is the breaking down of institutional silos and cross-silo collaboration. The best institutions in the country that actually move retention numbers operate across the boundaries of their internal organizations. And so the triumvirate of the provost, the EVP, and the VP for student experience and enrollment, those three folks, or however you say it, ESE is what the shorthand for it, those three folks have to be a team. And for us to have achieved the progress that we've achieved, I think it is in strong measure because of the way in which those organizations, this new leadership, the organizations themselves, have been collaborating really, really well. It's tough to do. It's easy to get mired in one's own everyday challenges. I'm responsible for this. Because we've shifted the responsibility focus from this is what I have to do to we need more students who are recruited, retained, and graduated. When you shift your, when you put all of your attention there, I don't care what you do every day. Your job is to help recruit, retain, and graduate more students. And with that change in focus, you feel the organization shift and how it begins to operate. And so I'm really proud of the work and the stabilizing force that Cheryl has been, but also the collaborative nature of their work.
Very quickly, I don't say this much, and I'm a staff member, not a faculty member, but the extensive and thorough amount of communication that we've seen from the provost office, whether it's, you know, she mentioned the updates, but she didn't mention the fifth week update, the CAPE curriculum review, the diversity, equity, inclusion updates, and on the other updates too. These aren't just you know, glossy statements. A lot of her comments in those are very thorough and in response to concerns that she's had voiced to her. I mean, the amount of information coming from the provost just since August is tremendous. It's thorough, and frankly, she should be commended for it because it's a tremendous amount of information that's coming, and I think the campus community, especially on the faculty side, and I can tell you, I speak for myself only. I haven't heard from staff on this, but I'm sure those that receive it and read it are very well informed. So thank you.
Yeah, the faculty and the staff are seeing progress. I think that is real progress. Knowing that we had a thin agenda for the academic committee, I gave myself an assignment. Most of you know I'm reading books all the time, and so I want to talk about the latest one, and I recommend it to anyone in the room, but especially the other regents. This segs nicely into what we've just been discussing, and it has to do with the affordability of college. We all know that's a big topic, along with the cost of health care today. And I first heard about this book listening to NPR a few weeks ago. It was on that, and then a review of it showed up in the New Yorker magazine, so I decided I better get it. And it's written by Caitlin Zaloom, and the title is Indebted. She's actually an anthropologist at NYU, but the book is about the impact that the cost of college is having on middle-class families. And as we know, there have been some tectonic changes in the middle class in the last 30 years or so. And I'm going to mention just a few things that I gleaned from this book, and I think you'll find interesting. It has an historical account of what's happened with higher education and the funding of it, particularly since World War II, from the GI Bill to on up to more recent federal programs that have basically shifted most of the cost to families, students and families. And with this, as we know, that affects recruitment, retention, graduation rates and everything else. And it also speaks, Bruce Schulte is going to give us some updates on some of our metrics, but speaks directly to metric number one and number two of what Bruce will be talking about, which concerns advising and finding aid for students. But one of the things that strikes you right off is that student debt in America right now is $1.5 trillion. And most of that is backed up by the government in the form of loans, although it is on the back of students and families. To put that in perspective, it makes the federal government the largest consumer loaner in America. J.P. Morgan has $100 billion in consumer loans, and Bank of America, $200 billion. So it dwarfs our largest banks in terms of where the money is coming from. And there's all kinds of different programs, from the 529 savings program, which only 3% of Americans participate in, and those are 3% of the wealthiest Americans, so it really doesn't make much dent. And our student aid people, I don't know if any are here now, but they're dealing with this every day, and it's complex and it's confusing, and trying to get students and families the type of aid that they have to go to college is a daunting task, to say the least. Since the late 1980s, when we've seen this problem just balloon, college costs have gone up four times the rate of inflation and eight times the rate of family income, median family income. So you begin to understand and realize how it is really difficult. I would encourage any of the regents, people you know that are going to college or families you know, ask them what their student debt is and how they have managed to send someone to college. These are our students. And what you'll find out is they've cobbled together resources from two, three, four, five, six different places. And most of them, yes, are leaving with significant debt that impacts their ability to buy a home and other things that we think middle-class Americans ought to be able to do. So it's a fascinating read. I won't go into it in any greater depth, but I think certainly it was a bit eye-opening to me and really drives home the importance of the work that we do. I thought of George and C.J. Nichols when I was reading that. There's a chapter on minorities and how it's tougher on them for lots of reasons. And then the work that others do to try to allow Western to fulfill its mission. I think some of the policy changes that have recently been enacted by President Caboni certainly speak loudly to these things and gave me comfort to think that those were in the right direction as well. So it's a good read. Anyone that reads a book, the academic committee is a good place to have book reviews, and I would welcome anybody else coming up with that. Any questions, comments? I'm telling you, if you'll talk to students or family, people you know in your hometown, and you ask them, what's your student debt? You'll be surprised. It's eye-popping, and it's affecting their lives, and it's students, it's their parents, it's their grandparents, it's their aunts and uncles, sometimes it's friends. People are really, but the good news is they value a college education that much that they know it is integral to the American dream. And so we need to do everything we can to make it affordable. And like I say, Bruce, I'll let you talk about metrics one and two maybe, but I think we've really ramped up some of our efforts in those areas too. With that, Mr. Chairman, that's all the academic.
All right. Regent Henson, Student Affairs Committee.
Thank you, and thank you all for being patient with me. I needed to attend the ribbon cutting for a sisterhood project that we funded at the Gordon Ford School of Business, and it was a clothes closet. And there was a little confusion as to who needed to be doing the ribbon cutting, so it was me. you all should have seen me run in heels. Now, I used to do this when I was in college, but it was after I had a Big Red and two Hostess cupcakes. If you had seen me running up there, but of course, some policeman, campus cop, asked me if I was okay, having a medical emergency, and I said no. And so he helped me the rest of the way up. So I went and did the ribbon cutting, and I now need to present Brian Kuster. As soon as he's done, I am rudely going to leave again because we have our sisterhood luncheon, and I am the chair-elect for the WKU Sisterhood. It is a group of women that are very like-minded, and we combine our resources in order to give grant money to other WKU-related organizations. And the best part about it is there are no men. It is all women. It's all women run. And that is probably why it's my favorite organization at WKU. But I just wanted to let you all know when I dart out of here that I'm not trying to be rude. I need to be somewhere else because my dance car is full today. I also want to thank you all, and I'm trying to be lighthearted, but I do appreciate all the cards and the thoughts and the texts on the passing of my father. I appreciate you all saying things and stuff. It was very meaningful at the time when I received them. Some of you all don't know how often or how great it was to just hear a kind word or a nice text or something. It was much appreciated. My father grew up here in Bowling Green, and when we did his eulogy, and I had to speak, we talked about my father was the karaoke, had the karaoke ready to go. My dad was a karaoke man, so it was ready to travel. He was also the life of the party, but my father was a pilot, and he got that dream when he was at T.C. Cherry Elementary School in fifth grade. They had career day, and the Eastern Airlines chief pilot came in and did career day. And my father sat in front of Judge Joe Huddleston, and after the gentleman was done presenting, talking about flying, my father turned around and looked at Joe Huddleston and said, "That's what I want to be when I grow up." And my father lived that dream, made a good career out of it, was with Transworld Airlines for 35 years. I have traveled the world, and I have nothing but good things to say about my father and the dream that he had. And he's one of the few people I know that was able to take something he loved and make a career out of it. And not too many people can say that. And I will tell you, he loved flying till the day he died. Even though it was expected, I was not ready. And I just think that just says that life is short, and we ought to just every day live it to the fullest and just sometimes know that life is just a little bit too short. So thank you all. I did that without crying. That's a good sign, guys. Well, now I'm going to introduce Brian Kuster, the VP of Enrollment and Student Experience, and I have to agree with Provost Stevens, that does not roll off the tongue. I wish it would. So I'll hand it over to you, Brian.
Well, first, let me thank Regent Bell because he talked about exactly what I wanted to talk about today and why we have been working on this new scholarship model. And I wish I could say that we coordinated that, but it worked well that we delayed the went back to the original agenda because it ties in very well. I think in everybody's packet, you received just the printed copy of the scholarship model, but again, I'm very pleased to be here today. And this is a culmination of probably a year and a half of work since President Cavone created the Division of Enrollment Student Experience. We have been working tirelessly as a division, working with the provost and academic affairs and with EVP. Howarth and before her, Ann Mead, on doing things to help students be successful and to remove barriers. Student debt is an issue for our students. The last time this model was revised or adjusted was the fall of 2015, so it definitely was time for us to take a look at that. I want you to know that we used a lot of data to help us make these decisions, but really our decisions were based on how do we increase the access and opportunity for our students. You know, we're increasing access by decreasing cost. You know, we're helping close that gap so there is hopefully less loan that the students will have to take on. We know that one of the primary reasons that students are not retained is financial. And so we knew that we needed to take a hard look at this model. One of the things that that you'll notice immediately if you were familiar with the previous model is that we removed the ACT score for almost all merit and targeted scholarships. By doing that, it definitely rewards the students for their 4 years of academic work in high school as opposed to whatever score they may have received on the ACT, how many ever times they took that. Because that's a bigger, we know that high school GPA is a better indicator for WKU students for their success than necessarily the ACT score. We also increased the minimum merit from $1,500 to $2,500. You also will see that there's a new band of scholarships that we created. For those students that have a 3.0 to a 3.3, now are eligible for a $2,500 scholarship. That was not, is new with this new model. One of the things that I'm proud of, and again, Regent Bell talked about, is we created additional scholarship opportunities for underrepresented minority students. Western has a compelling interest to have a diverse student body. And again, we know that for our URM students, financial issues are a grave concern. And then lastly, I just want to point out that we are investing over $5 million into this this new scholarship model. But we're going to, one of the things that we've been looking at and doing for the last year and a half and working with Ruffalo Noel Levitz is helping us be more efficient and effective in how we award our scholarships and who we award it to, so we're not over-awarding some students that may have the ability to pay more, and we're not under-awarding students that definitely need that. We also have been privileged because of the Opportunity Fund. That's created over 72 new endowments that we have access to, and over $27 million of funds that have been donated to that. And we are doing some discounting of the scholarships. So, again, that's just a brief overview. I'm happy to answer any questions, or President Boney, anything you'd like to add.
This is a game changer for how we recruit students at WKU. President Cherry created this institution as a place where anyone who wanted a college degree should be able to come regardless of their family's economic condition. And we have to do everything in our power to help keep our costs reasonable, to target aid to those who are least able to afford a college degree, and most importantly, do everything that we can with the scarce internal resources we have to provide that opportunity to as many people. It changes those students' lives, it changes their families' lives, and it's good for the economic future of our region. And the last is that this is also shifting toward a net tuition revenue model. And we've talked for years about how much do we spend on scholarships, and I'm proud that we're going to be more efficient and shift dollars internally to absorb some portion of the additional costs, that we've been able to convince 72 individuals and families to invest in endowed scholarship to help support a growing opportunity scholarship effort. That will continue. We have a $50 million goal, and I have every expectation that through Casey's leadership and the work of philanthropy and alumni engagement will grow that number. But the last is thinking differently about how it is we provide discounts. And the end result, from my perspective and from the perspective of the leadership team, is changing a focus on full-time equivalent or headcount and focusing on net tuition revenue and focusing on that revenue growth over 4 years. And so I'm appreciative of the tremendous work that was done across enrollment, student experience, our EVP for Strategy Operations Finance in that organization, and also Academic Affairs. It's truly a team effort. There have been hundreds of folks involved in this, and we use the best in the country to help us put it together. I will tell you, my president colleagues at sister institutions are amazed at this. They're amazed for a couple of reasons. That we took a leadership role and did it first in the Commonwealth, number one, and number two, that we were able to do it as quickly as we were. And so this will be a competitive advantage for us. We must execute our recruitment plan to make sure it does what it's supposed to do. But at the end of the day, This is a tremendous, tremendous move for WKU, our prospective students, and our whole region.
Does anyone have any questions?
No? It's not a question. I'd just like to say one of the other hats that I wear on this campus is that I'm also a WKU Spirit Master. And that gives me the opportunity to give campus tours each and every week. And I get to see firsthand the students that are coming through that this is going to benefit. And I have heard nothing but absolute positive things about this model. And I would really like to commend President Cavoni and all the staff for taking this initiative. You know, the only downside that I've heard from students is they wish they could have it now too. And I think that's really telling from a student's perspective. And as long as we're a student-centered university, if you're hearing those things from students, then you know you're doing the right thing.
Anyone else?
I had a meeting. So it's fine to get all my questions.
Okay. Yep. Are you good?
I'm good.
Okay. All right. Anybody else have anything?
I just talked a lot really quickly. I rarely receive messages from my hometown about events on this campus. I'm from Pulaski County, Somerset. And I receive more messages and comments from people that I went to high school with who have college-age, almost college-age students. It really dates me a little bit. You know, kids getting ready. And the idea that this cloud of the ACT has been lifted from over their head is they feel like they have children now that will be more successful and they can better plan for college not having to worry about that cloud. And that has been a consistent message that I've received since this announcement came out frequently.
And the last little bit to add to that, some of you all saw me here on Monday, and I brought a young lady in to tour WKU because I'd really like her to attend Western. And we were going through the whole tour, and we went up, and I got to finally see the information session that they offer at the Alumni Association building up in the auditorium. And they have presented this, and I will tell you, all I heard was oohs and ahs. And so I followed up with the other two people. Actually, I've had four people. Today, I have a tour going on right now as well for another young woman who's interested in Western, and we're recruiting her pretty heavily. The first three have come back, and we're talking about different aspects of the scholarship, whether the lowering of ACT scores and also of the help that it was going to provide. But it really didn't hit me until I was sitting there and watched on that big screen talking about the assistance and hearing people in the background saying, oh, my gosh, that's great. Oh, how cool. And I just think that, you know, when you think about the economy, you think about the future, we have students, and this, I believe, will help with retention as well. And because if you don't have the family support at home and you don't have the financial resources, it's hard for that family to encourage you to come back a second semester. So you end up having debt that you then go home and have to figure out how you're going to repay. And then at some point in time, they have a minimum wage job, possibly, that they can't pay that debt back. Then it does trickle down the whole economy. It affects whether they can buy a house, a car. Also, too, at some point in time when there's bad debt, the taxpayers end up having to take care of it. So if we're doing a proactive stance and making this available for our students, I can't imagine what this is going to do. And being the first in the Commonwealth, that's quite something to be said.
How do these scholarships carry forward into their sophomore and junior years?
As long as they maintain at least a 2.5, they will receive these, because that's the other piece that we've noticed in the past, is a student would come in and may get a scholarship, and normally their high school GPA is higher than what their college GPA will be, and so they drop below that band and lose that funding, and then they have to drop out. And so, again, we're looking at different ways that as an institution, we've created barriers for students to their success. And if we know they can graduate and we're not accepting them if we don't think they can, then we want to make sure they can be successful. And so taking away that scholarship would be detrimental to them. So as long as they're making progress and have at least a 2.5, we're going to continue their scholarship.
Anyone else like to make any comments? Chair Johnson, I'm done with my committee report.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you.